You're listening to Global Heart to Heart Radio. This is Mary Alice. Thank you for joining me on today's podcast. I was excited to sit with pioneer photographer Gail Mooney and to hear about her most recent documentary film, Like a Woman. Like a Woman is a film about women who are breaking barriers in male-dominated professions. Amazing and inspiring women of many different backgrounds and of all ages. Women being who and what they want to be in their careers. Like a Woman is a film that informs women and girls about their unlimited potential, and it empowers them to understand that there are limitless possibilities in today's workforce. Gail, during her more than 30 years as a professional photographer for international magazines and major corporations, knows what it's like to be the only woman in the room. I think you will enjoy hearing Gail tell a few stories of her travels while shooting for National Geographic, Travel and Leisure, and the Smithsonian. We also hear Gail tell of her first feature-length documentary, Opening Our Eyes, a joint project she worked on with her daughter, Erin Kelly. They circled the globe seeking ordinary people who are making our world a better place, one person at a time, opening our eyes, creating good, the global power of one. This interview was not recorded in the Global Heart to Heart studio. Instead, I sat with Gail on her closed-in back porch on a lovely early autumn afternoon with a pile of cookies next to us, hearing all about Gail's adventurous career in photography. The interview opens with me having just asked Gail to speak about her most recent project, Like a Woman.
Right now, I had just finished editing the current film that I had been in post-production on for the last 5 years. And it's about women who are working in male-dominated professions, which, you know, they say, tell the stories you know, whether you're writing a book or doing a movie. I know about being the only woman in the room, you know, in the profession I was in. I mean, it's changed a bit, certainly in still photography, where I started out, but in filmmaking, it's still very much a male profession, at least behind the camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you might find a producer, quite a few producers, a few women directors, not many. So anyway,
so I saw the trailer.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Great.
And then I'm looking for the whole, and then I figured it wasn't finished yet.
No, it's finished. It just hasn't been released. It's just that there's a protocol, you know. You don't want to put it online because it could make you ineligible for certain film festivals.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Okay.
There's just different stipulations.
How does one get to see it before you do release it to film festivals and that sort of
thing? Yeah, I'll send a private link out. Like, so anyway, I was saying, so when I figured the film festivals were, you know, it wasn't, the traditional path wasn't there, I figured I'd take it on the road. And then I said, well, let me see, how can I do this, you know? And so I figured the biggest cost would be a van that would not just be a van, but, you know, something I could actually live in, but not something I would have to pull.
I'm with you all the
way. So, I mean, this was a van, but, and it was too tall to, like, go into McDonald's drive-up, you know? Not that that was a deal-breaker for me, but...
But practical.
But it was tall enough to stand up in, you know. It had a stereo, a TV, a microwave, a two-burner stove.
Life is good.
A shower.
Yeah.
I didn't need anything.
Right.
And then I figured, okay, you know, expenses and everything else for, you know, I tried to figure out where I wanted to go and have some people on the ground that would do screenings and get the people there. And then I ran a Kickstarter campaign, which I had done 8 years ago and said I'd never do again because it's very stressful.
Yes.
But I wanted to do this.
Right.
And
well,
so
it's such a valuable film. It's such important information.
Yeah. And I just, you know, it was just, everybody was, it was like the world, you know, hit the pause button.
Yeah.
And everybody was getting super depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were a couple of Zoom groups, I would say, that were started because I have a lot of friends in places like New York and other cities mm-hmm. who, I mean, can you imagine being in New York during when they shut everything down for March and April?
No.
So people were so isolated.
Right.
That, and photographers are like that anyway, you know, by nature. And so.
But also by choice.
And by choice.
Not by.
Yeah. Right. They're kind of lone
it's
creatures.
It's your choice when you're ready to go out.
Not so much filmmakers because mm-hmm. that's more of a team effort, right. you know. But definitely for photographers. And so, you know, but even that was getting, you know, when the weather started getting warmer, I needed to get out. I needed to get out and I needed to get this out.
Everybody needed to get out. Yeah. So how are you? So you needed to get it out.
And so I did. So I came up with this plan and this agenda and 37 days. And I think there was a screening. It wasn't always every 3 days, but it turned out to be, you know, every 3 days mm-hmm. there'd be a screening in a different place. And
now you're doing this on the road in your little van.
On the road. So they could have been in a backyard, on a farm, and on a beach.
Did you do screenings in Ashland?
Not in Ashland.
Oh.
No. In Skio.
Skio. Where's
Skio?
That?
About 4 hours, 3 hours north of
in
Ashland.
Oregon?
Yeah, about 2 hours south of Portland.
Oh, wow.
In the Wilmette Valley, sorry. I didn't because I figured I'd do one in Skio and then, and actually I had a couple in California lined up, but by the time I got to California, that was like all red.
Yeah.
So a couple of people got cold feet and I don't blame them.
Yeah. No, there's fires are still going on.
Well, and then that started too. That was after I left.
Red. Okay.
Yeah. No, I meant because of COVID. They were, you know, but that was a whole nother thing. But luckily I missed that, although it was very hot the whole time I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Very hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But,
and dry.
Extremely dry. In fact, I left on July 25th and I came back on the 31st of July 25th to the 31st of August and not one screening had to be postponed or canceled because of rain. Mm-hmm. I had maybe one morning in all that time where it sprinkled in 37
wow.
days. So either I was incredibly lucky.
Right.
Or it was very dry everywhere in the country.
It was very dry. We just had a bunch of fires.
Yeah.
In from Ashland
yeah.
up to town.
Oh, I know. Max was telling me about it. Yeah.
It was bizarre.
That must have been scary.
It was very bizarre. And so getting the rain was a great gift.
In fact, when Tom came out, we were staying in our daughters in Sunnyvale. One night, it was this loud thunderstorm. But no rain,
mm-hmm.
just loud.
Just thunder.
And she told me that it was sparks from that night that started those original fires. And I believe it because it was right about the time that I left, you know, I kind of left California, came down and had another screening in Santa Fe that those fires broke out up there.
I read that there were record number of lightning strikes.
And I believe it.
That were causing these fires.
Yeah,
and it was a record number.
Because it was so hot. It was so dry.
Right. What inspired Like a Woman?
Well, I started out doing short stories mm-hmm. of, or short videos of women. I think it was around 2015, and I would come across a woman who'd be doing something very interesting in a career that there weren't that many women in. And I would start doing these video stories and built a few of them up. And then a fellow filmmaker encouraged me to make it into a feature documentary. And so I knew I needed to add it a few. And I did that last year. Well, it's about from this point on till the end of last year, I added about 4 or 5 stories.
Wow.
And that's when I went into editing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in right after the holidays.
Mm.
So, but this is the, you know, the life I've led, you know. I've always been the only woman in the room.
And, you know, the timing of your going around with this, I mean, now that Ruth Bader Ginsburg just passed.
Yeah.
For this, the time of this, for women to see this, it's just being, it's incredible.
I know. In fact, I was thinking about that because one of the film festivals that I was in, although it never seemed like it happened, you know, like I was saying, they did this, they sent me this video that was attached to my trailer or part of my trailer. And it was all about audience feedback, videos of the audience saying what they liked about the movie.
Oh,
so I thought,
great.
How cool. But it was 9 minutes long. It was 9.5 minutes long. I thought, nobody's going to listen to
that. That's long.
You know, we're into seconds, this culture, you know? 30 seconds, that's it, you
that's
know?
That's all you got.
Yeah, yeah, that's it, if you're lucky.
Yeah. Isn't you know? That incredible?
Yeah. So I cut it down to about 2.5, and I could still cut another 0.5 minute out of mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
Like as a promotion.
Do you do your own editing and everything?
I do, but I wish I'm not a professional editor. I wish I had a, you know, I'd love to hire a professional editor and mm-hmm. a professional sound mixer.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I will. I mean, you know, I actually was under budget on my trip with Kickstarter, so maybe I will.
Under budget?
Yeah, I know.
That's
under
a woman
budget.
For
and,
you.
And I was still under budget after licensing You Don't Own Me. That's the song, Leslie Gore.
Uh-huh.
You Don't Own Me, that's the song that closes the credit, but it was expensive.
I know what you would have to go through to play that song at the end.
Yeah, well, you know, just a broker who actually talks to the, in this case, there was a publisher and there was a recording,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the recording artist. I mean,
right.
She's gone, but her heirs.
Right.
And then whoever published it, I don't remember.
Because mm-hmm.
there's so many versions,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So when you, how did you arrange meeting all the subjects in your documentary?
Some came to me and I found them all which ways. For instance, I'm on my board of my trade association, and or I was, I'm sorry. and one of the people who served on the board, her college roommate was a heavy lift industrial helicopter pilot.
I love it. That's the woman that's in your feature,
yeah,
the helicopter pilot?
Yeah.
Because that's some helicopter she's
yeah,
driving.
And another woman, I Googled female auto mechanics. And I came up with one in like the whole New York, Philly area.
Really?
Yeah.
One?
No, this was 5 years ago. One.
Wow.
And either she was real, but she's a real good brander, this woman.
Mm.
And so she was in it. That's how I found her. That was kind of happenstance. Two people I saw because they had stories on the TV show Sunday Morning on CBS on Sunday Morning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Barbara Van Cleve, who's a fine art photographer, rancher, and Taylor Lafferty, who's a pilot for the Goodyear.
Mm-hmm.
Goodyear boom pilot. Race car driver, Tom was doing a corporate job, and they had flown her to the United States to be a spokesperson for the company he was shooting for.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to photograph her, you know, mm-hmm. in a setting of some sort. I'm trying to remember. My good friend who's a photography professor at Cal Poly, the dean of engineering and the dean of architecture were both women.
No, they weren't in the trailer.
No. And see, so the ones that I got, the people that I found later weren't in the trailer because the trailer was done much sooner. And I just didn't, you know, I just was so worn out editing the film. I didn't want to redo the trailer.
I didn't imagine.
But actually, I'll probably revisit it now. You know, time heals all wounds.
Get a little rest, a little space in between.
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, this pandemic, it was kind of like, well, I've already been sequestered for 3 months editing this film.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like...
You were ready to rock
nothing
and roll.
Changed. But in one hand, and the other hand, it's like nothing changed, mm-hmm. right? Well, it hadn't gone anywhere, so...
So what don't we see on the trailer? What other women do you
feature? There's Barbara, the fine art photographer. She's the oldest. She's 85 years old.
Wow.
I have to work her into the trailer because she's just, her sound bites were just so right on and you know, it was her tone. She was authoritative, but not bossy, mm-hmm. just like knowledgeable, mm-hmm. you know.
My sense of it, the way you're describing it, is that she was confident in her power.
Very confident.
Just confident in her power.
Very.
Who she is.
Absolutely. And they were all pretty much, I mean, then the youngest one was a video designer who did these, I'll call them huge LED walls behind big bands like Aerosmith,
ooh, wow.
and Hootie and the Blowfish and James Taylor. And she's, I think when I interviewed her, she was 29. So she's the young one. And she actually, her parents used to live on the other side of town. So I knew her because my daughter was best friends with her sister growing up. So that's another
way.
I knew someone. So we went out to, Tom was with me, and we went out to, I interviewed her in her New York apartment, but I needed to get some B-roll, and so we went out where she had just finished doing a residency show for Aerosmith. And then we got to stay for the show. Well, that's why I became a photographer. You know, it's funny because most guys, they were more geek oriented. You know, they like the gear and they like the dark room. And I like the access, mm-hmm. you know. I've been studying architecture in college and left after 2 years. It was like all the protests, you know, the Vietnam War. And I didn't want to be there.
So, where'd you go to college?
Well, I started out in Syracuse. Mm-hmm. So I went there for a couple of years and then I left. And what was going to be like a 3-month trip, first time to Europe, turned into a year long backpacking on it. And I was hooked. And so when I came back, I was more serious about going to school, but I wanted a lifestyle that gave me access to travel and culture.
And that's
so I said, well, I'll be a photographer. I mean, I was very naive, you know. And the only reason I went into architecture is because in 10th grade, I went to see the guidance counselor. And he said something like, I remember my mother was there. And he said, well, if your daughter was a boy, I'd say you should go into architecture. But since she's a girl, she should be an interior designer. So I thought, well, I'm going into architecture.
Oh my
of course,
God.
I hated it, but you know, I probably would have hated the interior designer more than.
Yeah, really.
Now it was like the first time I was in a male environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I took a trip, and I became extremely independent.
The first time was a guidance counselor.
Well, yeah, I was very independent after this year-long trip. I mean, you can imagine, and.
Yes, I can.
And then I went to Brooks Institute of Photography, and mm-hmm. I was one of 6 women out of 600.
Wow.
So it was another male environment. Mm-hmm. So I figured, you know, at this point in my life, I guess I should make a film about it. And so...
because after all these years,
yeah.
not a lot has changed.
No. Well, see, that's the thing. I got in business professionally in 77. Believe it or not. And I say to myself, hardly anything's changed. But then I think about it, or I see an old 70s movie, like some of the worst are Burt Reynolds. Oh, I look at those movies now and I'm like, my God, you know, how sexist they are. And I just can't even believe it. So then I think, yeah, it's changed.
Little bit.
But it's been so slow. Well, you know what Ruth Bader Ginsburg says when somebody says how many women should be in the Supreme Court. She says 9. and remember one male reporter's like, what? You know, and she says something like, you wouldn't have batted an eye if I had said that about men.
That's right. I loved her.
I know.
I'm getting chills.
I know. I was crying. I didn't even expect to be crying, you know? But you stop and think of all the things that have certainly positively affected our lives, you know?
You know, and there are a lot of people now, younger women, who have no idea. They have no clue what RBG did or why she did it and what it was like before she came along or Bella Abzug or all the women in that time who really the pioneers and what they went through, like with you.
Oh, yeah.
It's not easy being the only woman in a room full of men.
Tom and I used to do a lot of work together in our early days. We used to work for Travel and Leisure a lot, and the art director was a wonderful mentor. Oh, he was a wonderful mentor, and we were young. We were in our 20s, and he would bring us out to dinners with a photographer that was getting, like, the feature in the magazine, you know, and introduce us to these legends, right?
Wow.
And I remember one of them said to me once, again, I was the only woman, and he said, well, you don't look like a photographer. And, you know, I'm so pissed off at myself. I mean, this is like 40 years ago. I'm still pissed off. Why didn't I ask him, what do you mean?
Right. Well, what is that? Yeah, what does that look like? What's a photographer?
I don't know. I still, it's driving me crazy. He's dead now. I'll never know.
Write him a letter. People used to say to me, you hate men. And I say, no, I don't hate men. I don't hate anybody. But I do hate their privilege.
Yeah.
And the attitudes they have toward women.
Yeah.
So, but it didn't come across that way.
Yeah.
Because of the way I was coming across.
Yeah.
But, and there have been many of those situations. Just prime example for what you just said.
Yeah.
And what do we do with that?
Hmm. Well, I'll tell you what I said. At the time, I drank a few glasses of wine.
There you go.
And he was a bit of a whiner, okay? And his wife was there. And he was old enough to be my father, maybe my grandfather, I don't know. But he was whining and whining and whining that he couldn't find an assistant who could make a decent print. Now, I was like the peer of these assistants, okay? So I kind of probably felt a little like I needed to represent here. You know what I mean? Like, you know? So I said something like, well, you know what they say? Your print's only as good as your negative. And there was this, like, all the air went out of the room.
It.
And then the art director almost fell on off the chair laughing.
It.
And then his wife laughed the hardest. And she said, you tell him, honey.
That's right. I love it. That was great.
And that was merely because it was a stream of consciousness after two glasses of wine.
So you, for National Geographic and...
Smithsonian, I used to shoot for them a lot. I don't do as much still photography assignments like that anymore because they don't have the budgets for that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's pickup, you know? I mean, think about it. Everybody's got a camera. Right. And I made a great living.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
A great living, a great life. Put my daughter through Northwestern.
Mm.
I got no complaints.
Traveled everywhere.
Tom, I met Tom when we were at Brooks, which is in California.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived there for about 3 years, but he's from Pennsylvania.
Are you originally from New Jersey?
I was born in Chicago.
Oh, Chicago.
But I've lived in New Jersey since I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you're in New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
New Jersey.
So, anyway, I love to tell people that I used to live in California and now I live in New Jersey, and they all react the same way and they say, what happened? I love to tell that story.
So I'm just so curious, some of the places that you traveled and some of the projects that you've done for the different magazines that you've written.
When I was shooting for Geographic, I was kind of a city specialist to them, you know? So I did stories on, all kinds of cities, Chicago, Miami, Austin, Texas, a lot of music towns, a lot of great music towns, which I love because I usually hang out at the blues joints at night. But I love working for Smithsonian because they always give me something that was very different.
Mm-hmm.
Like while the Geographic was giving me all these city stories,
right,
Smithsonian gave me a story on the smallest county population-wise in the United States, Arthur, Nebraska. And
wow.
I'm like, what am I going to do? But the thing is, I had to get out of my own box.
Mm.
And instead of kind of do an overview, as I might in a city, because mm-hmm. it's tempting and it's easy.
Right.
And everything can be on the surface if you don't have the time. And I'm usually given 2 weeks, if that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I could really go deep into the story and come up with different looks, because it was a tiny little town, uh-huh. you know, with hardly anyone in it. It was very therapeutic.
So what did you do? What was out of the box for you?
Well, more landscapes, mm-hmm. more loneliness. If I photographed people, I would try to photograph them in that context, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And I was there during their annual rodeo fair.
Oh my gosh.
So there was people then, but even still, you know, I would actually use the time to get contacts mm-hmm. to maybe go out to their ranch. Mm-hmm. Like one time I went out to the ranch of the guy who had won for best cowboy or something at the fair that year. And I remember sitting on his, on the fence, on his corral, and I was shooting, and I would have said, and I did say, I think, are you breaking the horse? You know, the animal. Mm-hmm. And I think I did say it, and he looked at me and he said, no, ma'am, I never want to break an animal spirit. And I remember hearing that, I'm like, I said to myself, damn, if I wasn't married, I'd say, let's go, you know? I can relate to that.
That speaks you know? To your soul, huh? Beautiful, beautiful.
But yeah, I'll never forget that afternoon. He was, and that was way before the movie The Horse Whisperer. Uh-huh. So when I saw that with Robert Redford right, cast, I'm right. like, oh my God.
That was a great movie. And you thought of this guy. Yeah. I love it.
And I went back 31 years later.
Really?
I had to go back. And it was and Tom was with me. He had never been there. And it was a Sunday. And I mean, it was like being dropped into a Twilight Zone episode. There
really?
Was not a car, a person, nothing.
Wow.
Now, if it had been March in New Jersey, it would have been COVID. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it would have had a look of everybody, like, you know, leaving the Titanic right. all at once, right? right? right not, right. you know, unexpectedly.
Right.
But it was just a Sunday afternoon.
Right.
And it was such a weird thing, because it was like a Sunday back when I was a kid uh-huh. that didn't exist anymore.
Right, they don't exist anymore.
Right? Mm-hmm. And yet there it was.
Wow.
I know.
It does exist somewhere.
And part of me was like, wow, this is really something. And then I was a little sad because I wanted to go in the cafe and talk to somebody.
Right, you know? Right.
But
nobody was there.
No, nobody.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
But I got back.
Yeah.
I even had the manuscript. I was on a mission.
Sounds like it. You were looking for that cowboy.
I was looking for anybody in the text, actually.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, I'm assuming, like to go out there and everything, Smithsonian paid you everything.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
That's the whole fun,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Like one time they gave me, oh my God, I think it was one of the last stories I did for them. No, there were others after that. It was on the restoration of Versailles. Remember when Versailles had those terrible storms and ripped through all those beautiful old trees?
Long time.
It was a long time ago. I want to say it was in the late 90s. Yeah. And so they sent me to Paris to do the restoration of Versailles. So here I am and they're, I'm working with the head gardener of Versailles. Doesn't speak a word of French, and my French is very poor, but was quite a character. And another guy who's leading me up through the gunnels of the palace and up to the roof. And I remember standing on the rooftop of the Palace of Versailles and thinking, oh my God, about the history.
Oh man.
You know? And I just got chilled. So that's,
and you're getting
to me, why
like
I became
this.
A photographer. So, you know, experiences like that.
Right, right.
Right?
So you're there, you're having the experience, and you're photographing it.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. And if my, you know, I mean, sometimes, you know, you can trick yourself and you can remember an experience, but what you're really remembering is a picture you shot. Mm-hmm. But I remember that experience.
Why?
Because it was really more of an experience than a photograph. Yeah, it was a photograph looking down.
Right.
But the experience, no.
Okay, so here's what I get. In being in your profession,
Yeah. You
are having the experience. Wait, am I going to say this the right way that it just came through to me? Because the experience is what gives you a great negative. Right? The experience
That's right.
A great negative.
And then you jump off from there. Right?
Right.
So, and if it's a negative, you can crop in. Mm-hmm. So I can dial into whatever.
Right.
You know?
But it comes from the experience you had
while
you were creating that negative.
I love that.
Yeah. I love it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a layered.
And you know, it's such a fun. Yeah, it is very layered because, like, for instance, one of these women on the Zoom panel, she's a conductor. She's much younger than me, and she used to, I think, intern for Leonard Bernstein, right? Mm. Now, I photographed Leonard Bernstein when I was shooting a story on Tanglewood. Or actually, it was on the Berkshires. And I remember his passion. I remember shooting negative film because it was indoors and the color was, you know, back then it wasn't digital, so it was film and it was crap, you know. And so, as I'm thinking about that, I think, where are those negatives? You know?
Wow.
And we have so many things to get rid of around here. It's going to take a freaking lifetime because it's going to be like, there's going to be a closet that's literally going to be like Pandora's box, you know? And I'm going to fall down a rabbit hole, you know? Never seen again. You know, I remember my mom was from the UP in Michigan, and they said I was born in Chicago. My dad was from Chicago, and she went down to Chicago. But anyway, we went up to the UP, Tom and I, and we were...
What's the UP?
Upper Peninsula.
Okay.
Michigan,
okay.
Sorry. and it was really cold, but there was hardly any snow. And so we had to go way up to the Superior side to get snow.
Mm.
And it was getting dark, you know, it was at that magic hour when the snow is very blue and the sky's getting pink.
Mm.
And I remember Tom and I were walking out literally on these frozen waves. Frozen waves.
Wow.
And standing on these frozen waves. And I'm standing there and I have a tripod and I'm taking pictures and I'm just stopping for a second just to be in the moment. And Tom said, Gail, don't back up. He said, because there's this big crevice behind you. And it was the first time it occurred to me, it's like, shit, I could fall down that crack. Nobody would see me till May, you know? But it was beautiful.
And you were out for the show.
And actually, I wrote a blog on that, and it was called Standing on a 10-Foot Frozen Wave, and that thing went viral. It had to be
I believe it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I believe it. Unbelievable.
And it's a good title. And I'm terrible at titles, but yeah.
So, I'm all excited now. You got it all going here. You carried all this equipment. I've seen documentaries on filmmakers.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God. Because not only do you all go out and stand on a crevice that you can fall into nowhere.
Yeah.
But carrying all the equipment doing it.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like you didn't have a crew carrying all your equipment. You were carrying it all.
No crew. And that reminds me, my daughter and I, the last film I made, it was about, well, it was in 2010. And it was inspired by a friend of my daughter who, she graduated from high school. She didn't want to go to college. She took a gap year. Yada, yada, yada. She wound up in an orphanage. And that was when she was 19. And by the time she was 23, she had built her own children's home. So I thought, I want to go. And I had all these airplane miles. But I needed the purpose. So I thought, well, that's my purpose. I want to do a story on people who are creating positive change on six continents.
Is that opening our eyes?
Yeah. So that,
that
was,
looks like a fabulous.
Yeah. I put out an email to everybody I knew looking for subjects. And the first person who answered me was my daughter.
Opening Our Eyes. I want to make sure that is
OpeningOurEyes.net. Yeah. Or OpeningOurEyesMovie.com. Either way, you'll find it. But so she sent me an email. She had just graduated from college and she had her first job, but she didn't really like it. And within 20 minutes of getting my email, she wrote back and said, Mom, I got goosebumps when I read your email. I want to do this with you. And she like gave me a pitch, you know, like she sold it. Right. And I'm like, good for you.
So part of me was thinking, been a hard thing.
Just, I'm like, that's really, I was so proud. Like, good for you. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. This is going to change the dynamic, you know, because maybe I'm going to have to be more of her mother. And, you know, because she, you know, she was, what, 22 at the time? And I can't even imagine making that film because of that. Because just what you mentioned triggered the thought, the gear. We had two backpacks full of gear. Okay? And that was slimmed down.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I'm not even talking about our two suitcases that were probably half gear.
Mm-hmm.
We had very little clothes.
Well, I was going to say, one shirt and a pair of jeans.
Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, that was a challenge. That was a, I mean, that was a challenge, you name it.
I can't imagine.
Vaccinations.
Oh, yeah.
Visas.
I'm listening to your stories that you went here and you went there, and I'm thinking, and you're carrying all this equipment.
Yeah, but see, now with mirrorless cameras, it's not as bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot more compact. And I didn't take lights on that trip, but doing this Like a Woman film, we took LED lights, which are not hot lights, not heavy. The battery operated, or you can plug them in. And you have to go through customs
with it, right?
You know, I mean, I used to do seminars about it, you know, for... Well, two things. Still photographers who want to go into video for my trade association, and then how to make a feature movie with no crew and no money.
A woman in a man's field doing that. I'd like to see how men handle that. I would like to hear more about this because I saw the trailer, Opening Our Eyes.
Yeah.
Creating Good, the global power of one.
I know.
I came up with that.
I know. I came up with that. I need to come up with something like that for this film.
That is perfect.
The global power of one. Surprised someone hasn't stolen that.
That's beautiful. That's so right on.
Well, it was perfect for the film. Because
I can't wait to
see it.
It's
about nine individuals on six continents. Yeah, like one is one's a food rescuer from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll go to, she has all kinds of people bringing her food that they like. It could be a gourmet chef that doesn't have enough. It could be a food photographer that wastes eight hams finding the perfect one. Mm-hmm. It could be all these different people. And then she gives them to the needy, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's a much more sophisticated operation than that. A doctor that goes into the hills of Thailand, you know, where they're Burmese refugees and they probably have never seen a doctor in their life. You know, and everybody's kind of on the slide. It's like, where are you from? And nobody wants to say which country they're from.
Right, right.
Because they're not really, you know, it's very indigenous. A woman in the Amazon who's reforesting, believe it or not, in the Amazon. And just on and on and on and on, you know, these stories that people would say, but you have to cap it off somehow, somewhere. But... yeah, and that was the first time I did a Kickstarter. And at that time, I ran a Kickstarter for an editor. Kickstarter campaign.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So both times I did it, I met my goal. But it's, I hate it because you're constantly pestering your friends for money, you know? It's
right.
An awful thing.
Now, fundraising is...
Ugh, I hate it.
There's a certain art to fundraising.
And some people like it. And I'm like, I have to find one of those people.
Yeah, right? There you go. You know, it's your nature to be a photographer, the way you like to travel. And these are the two that I zoomed in on, Like a Woman and Opening Our Eyes. And they're you know, the Opening Our Eyes is, I can't, like I said, and I want to share this on my show. I want to promote your work because it's timeless.
Yeah.
It's timely right now, and it's timeless.
So that's true.
And that,
and both of these movies, I could go on. But the thing about Opening Our Eyes, so I listened to Jackson Brown on the treadmill. Who listens to Jackson Brown on the treadmill? I listen to Jackson. Anyway, so he has this one song that he had a lyric in there, and actually he uses this lyric quite a few times. And I think it was to open my eyes. And I thought, since my daughter and I were doing it together, I'll just change that to the plural, opening our eyes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I called his, or wrote an email to his, or no, I know. I used to give these seminars to my trade association, and everywhere I went, I asked if anybody knew Jackson Brown or knew someone who knew him, because I wanted to use his song in my movie, and I couldn't afford him. And one thing led to another, and Jackson Brown gave me his consent to use that song called Alive in the World in the film.
Mm.
And but not, I couldn't use it on DVDs, only in the festivals. In other words, he didn't want it out there, huh?
Right.
I get it. And so when, and every year, this year too, although it was postponed till next year, had tickets to his show. So when he came to...
He's still performing?
Oh, yeah. So when he came to Montclair, this was in 2012, I think, I said to the publicist, I said, you know, I have tickets for his concert tomorrow night, and I would love to thank him personally. And so she said, okay. And so she said, so when you get there, after the concerts, go to the left side of the theater, and there'll be a guy, just wear your, they gave me like a backstage pass, wear your pass, and this guy will come out to get you. And so I see this guy like looking, because everybody like storms the stage, you know, with that last song. And I see him, and he sees me, and I said, John? He says, yeah. And we go up the back stair, and he says, okay, just stay right here. And I'm literally at the top of the stairwell looking at a dressing room door that says Jackson Brown on it. I'm like, and he comes out, and I was so impressed because he was prepped, you know?
Mm.
He was prepped on who I was, who was going to be greeting him, if you will. And so the first thing he said, so when am I going to see your movie?
Mm-hmm.
And I had just picked up the DVD run from the Replicator. So I gave him a copy, and he looked at it for the longest time. And it had beautiful artwork. That's the thing about that film. Everyone wanted to get involved. And this one guy, he's actually a stock photographer, but he does these concept things. And he's a Canadian guy, and he saw that I was doing this film. He says, can I do your poster? And he did this one's beautiful composite. And he's mesmerized. And he says, wow, I just got goosebumps.
Mm.
And I remember saying to myself, wow, I just gave goosebumps to Jackson Brown. You can tell. I mean, he's very deep, you know. You can just tell. When, I mean, look at this lyrics. So. He got COVID, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He did, yeah. In New York.
Was it severe for him?
No, apparently not. But, you know, he's a singer.
Right. Oh, well,
and he's 70-something years old, so. They postponed his show, and so it's like a year never happened. It's the same seat, the same venue, just different days. But, you know, I was thinking, because I was talking to these, my friend, Cal Poly friend, she wanted me to talk to her class, photography students. For someone my age and for someone their age, they're probably, you know, at first I thought, oh, it must be horrible to be 20-something and go through this. But if you think about it, maybe not, because let's face it, do you want to get that? It's definitely going to make a mark on your life. And it's pivotal, and you're just starting out. So I actually think it might give this generation an edge. Because all bets are off, right? It's a whole new thing for everybody.
Right.
But it's new for you anyway.
Right.
So guess what? Mm-hmm. People in their 40s, you know, they probably had, like, I know all kinds of people in the Zoom group. They had trips planned and workshops planned. Nothing.
Right. Right.
You know, I'm at the point in my career, I want to generate my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I don't really want to say I won't do commission work, but, you know, I have so many ideas that I want to do that, yeah, I'll do that, you know, to support myself, but I don't aspire.
Right.
I'll tell you one thing that happened to me. It took me probably 10 years before I tell this story. I was going to photograph Walter Cronkite for the Geographic, for the Traveler magazine.
Oh, wow.
Because he lives in Martha Vineyard.
Right.
Or summers there. He did. And the story was on Martha's Vineyard, Nantucket. And it was in the 80s, analog days. And I had, I used to keep all kinds of notes of all my contacts and phone numbers, and there was no email back then, but then I recopied them before I'd go out, you know, because everything was a mess, and write down the numbers. So the day before I was going to photograph him, I called to confirm, because I was on Nantucket and I was going to take a short hop to Martha's Vineyard. And the phone rang and rang and rang and rang and rang, and he didn't answer. And I tried later, he didn't answer. I tried, didn't answer, all day long. I'm like, damn. Walter Cronkite stood me up. I'm like, I couldn't believe it, you know? And I go to bed that night, and I wake up at like 3 a.m, like, like that, you know? And I said, maybe I wrote his phone number down wrong.
Oh my God.
And it just like hit me. And the next morning, I, for whatever reason, I had kept my old notes. I don't know why, but they were in the bag. I guess I had done it on the plane. And I just kept the old notes. And I saw I was right. And I called him. And I was profusely apologetic. And I'm so embarrassed.
I just got a nod.
So embarrassed. And he said, and he says to me, well, why didn't you look me up in the phone book?
Oh, Jesus.
And I said, it wouldn't occur to me that you're in the phone book. So ever since then, I tell this to students all the time, young people all the time, because I wouldn't tell that story for years. And I said, you know what? Don't ever make an assumption.
Right? Did you ever get to meet with him?
Oh, yeah. So he was so nice. He rescheduled. And he brings me out on his big yacht. His mother was alive.
Oh,
she was down in the galley, like belt and scotch, at like 7 a.m. or something.
Oh, yes.
And he was just, he was wonderful. And when he had a first mate on board, it was a big, you know.
I bet. Boat.
And when we were coming by the harbor, you know, Cronkite was like, okay, now look ship shape now. And he was like at the helm. His everybody knew his boat. Oh, there's Cronkite on it.
Uh-huh, you know? Right.
Because
right.
Back then he was like,
on Martha's Vineyard.
Walter.
Yeah, you know, really.
I mean, the most trusted man in America.
Oh, really?
That was a real treat. And who else did I photograph on that? Peter Benchley. Photographed him and his two little dogs.
Wow.
On the beach.
It's interesting, the different experiences. And even now, if I relate what younger photographers do now compared to what you did, because of the difference in technology now.
Well, you don't know what you don't know, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Half the time I look at some of my old slides and I'm like, how did I even do that, you know? Manual focus, everything was manual. To this day, I use a totally automatic camera on manual. I use the automatic focus, though, because I have old eyes.
Uh-huh.
But I
that's amazing.
Everything else I use manual. I know, I'm weird. Tom's always yelling at me. Why are you doing that?
My thought is that's the art.
Well, it's interesting to say. I mean, you interviewed Mac. I met Mac.
I was just going to go to Mac.
I met him in Maine last summer. Not this past summer because nothing was happening, but last summer. It was called Fine Art Printmaking.
Is that the first time you met him?
I had met him at Photo Expo, but just like at a booth. Mm-hmm. It was like, hi. And, you know. Mm-hmm.
He's got a great story
He's got a million stories. Between him and I don't know who has more stories. We could outstory each other anytime at a bar. I'm like, bring it on, you know? so I went to Maine and printmaking. And I didn't really have a need to make prints because then, of course, you need walls and framing and, you know, and I have so many prints I still haven't put up, but that's where my head was. However, I wanted to optimize my files. Mm-hmm. Just because I wasn't going to print them didn't mean they weren't going to be shown somewhere, and I needed to optimize them. Mm-hmm. And as much as I knew Photoshop, I was self-trained, so I didn't really know it. Mm-hmm. And his class, totally changed it into an art, because I was looking at the photograph and saying, where do I want to take it? Okay. So in my case, I was bringing analog images that I didn't really have those choices back then.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I thought, well, let me work on those and make those choices now because it's 30 years later and I can change all kinds of things. Mac teaches you so that it's not destructive. So, for instance, if I wanted to change that wall purple, well, I might change my mind. Mm-hmm. So you never want to compress those layers. You always want to be able to go back.
Oh, yeah.
And most importantly, I think you have to know what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first thing he said. Look at your photograph. What do you want to do with it? And that's because by nature, I was a capturer. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't composite things. I'm not a studio photographer. I don't really create from scratch, if you will. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think of myself as like a different animal.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's kind of like, it doesn't need to be that way anymore.
Mm. So you're, as a capturer, you're going out there and this is what you see.
Yeah. Which is easy now.
That.
Right. Right. That's my decision.
Mm-hmm.
In camera. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because that's all I was deciding back then.
Right.
And I'd bracket, darker, lighter.
Right.
That was the art, was capturing that moment. But now with motor drive and digital, and it's a moot point, isn't it? I don't even think people notice the moment anymore.
Mm.
I don't know. Shoot a couple of them, especially if they're moving. I think people treat photography differently because of that too, though. It's ubiquitous,
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody has a camera.
I know.
Everybody.
Right.
Even if they don't think they do, they have a camera.
I have a fairly photographic mind, actually, a photographic memory anyway, but I'm going to just be in it and not be distracted by wanting to capture it, to save it, because then I'm
not... No, absolutely.
I wouldn't say that if I were a photographer.
I say that all the time.
But
I say that all the time. I always have to tell myself, stop for a second, take your face away from the camera and just be in the moment.
And be there and be where you are.
I have to do that.
Where you are.
I have to do that.
Especially when you travel to so many amazing places.
Absolutely. I consciously do that.
That's great. I didn't think about that, how that would be as a photographer.
Yeah.
Because it would seem to me that your camera is part of who you are. It's an extension of who you are. But at the same time, it is that being in the moment, place.
Yeah.
Then I can't resist taking pictures. There's some things I just can't resist. Yeah. I want to have those pictures.
Yeah, but keep in mind, your camera's, just one plane, right? You're not seeing what's happening over here or certainly behind you. And there's a saying, I forget who said it, some famous photographer, always turn around and look the other way. Mm. That might be the best picture.
Then I'm also hearing that you have to be visionary.
Yeah.
In what it is you want to create.
Well, yeah, but I don't feel myself like that, though. I've never thought of myself like that.
Really?
Yeah.
And then you'd say, well, what do I want in this picture? And so you have a certain sense of vision around it.
I know. I struggle with that. It's funny, though.
Before you even create it.
Yeah, because I have conversations with Mac like this, and I struggle with that. I feel like I'm the camera. My body's the camera, mm-hmm. and I'm like the tool. Tom and I do these biographical films, family stories for people, mm-hmm. high-end.
Mm-hmm.
Not like bring us your snapshots in a shoebox, you mm-hmm. know, but high-end, like a Ken Burns story of your family
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And it's all about that, you know, having conversations with people. And I thought when COVID happened, okay, I can still do this. I'll do it with Zoom, mm-hmm. which is certainly possible, or it's certainly possible yes. if older people don't want to travel, right. you know.
Or even be
in the same room, right?
That's right.
Because I'm thinking, you know, a lot of people are older, you know, that I've, people's parents, you know.
Right. In December of 2019,
yeah.
there was something like 200,000 people using Zoom. By March of 2020, there were like 1,200,000 people using Zoom because it's just exploded because nobody can leave the house.
Now, stop and think about what would be happening without that technology.
I know.
Right? What would people be doing
right
now?
You think people are depressed now?
It's all timing.
It's a beautiful thing.
Well, you have to think about what they do in 1918, you know, because they didn't have anything. But again, you know what you know.
Right.
You don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm. I would like to also know about how we're going to see Like a Woman.
Okay.
I want to make sure I have that on tape.
Okay.
On.
well, right now it hasn't been released yet.
Right,
yeah.
I know.
Opening Eyes has, but okay. Yeah.
And then we have, yeah, Open Your Eyes. That we can see, .net. What about your work with Tom? You were talking about doing family stories.
Yeah, like family biographical film.
And is that the work you've always done together?
No, we've been still photographers or video together.
Right.
Yeah. Mostly,
and you've done lots of
mostly
projects
a lot of
together.
We started out in magazine, but then a lot of corporates, some advertising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very diverse. And sometimes that's a fault, you know, but when you have two people, you're going to have two totally different styles. And when you're in this area, people like to put you in very, very particular niches.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, you know, it's not like being in St. Louis where you can be more of a generalist, if
mm-hmm.
you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be pigeonholed like that.
Right.
You know? With magazines, you never needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that's where my background comes from.
Mm, interesting.
But I'm not a huge fan of corporate work. The money's mm-hmm. good, but a square peg in a round hole. Well, when I graduated from Brooks, I was the only woman in my graduating class, one of the teachers, and it was 1975, right when the feds were mandating quotas for companies, mm-hmm. and one of them was Boeing. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to lose their contracts, so they had to hire women. And so my boss came to me and said, Gail, I got a job for Boeing in Seattle. I'm like, no, I don't want to move to Seattle. And I don't want to work for Boeing. I want to go to New York, and I want to work for a magazine. And New York was like 1975. It was like the pits, you know? There was like a bank robbery every other day. And I mean, it was just the worst time. 20 years later, someone had asked me to come and speak to the students at Brooks. And I, by this time, I had shot for Smithsonian, Travel and Leisure, National Geographic, you know? And so I'm showing them my stuff. And I see this teacher 20 years later in the back of the room, right? And so I'm getting my stuff, and he's still sitting there, and I get out of there and walk past him. He said, you should have taken that job at Boeing. Well, we had a little falling out in school, actually, come to think of it. He had a TA, you know, And we didn't have textbooks in Brooks. We had to take notes, and then we submitted our notes and got graded on them after every class.
Wow.
Which is like every 8 weeks. So I knew how to type, and Tom didn't. So I typed up the notebooks and did the artwork, you know, whatever needed to be done, the illustrations, and handed the, and they were like the same, right? So he got an A and I got a B, and I did all the work and I hit the roof.
Yeah, really?
And it was with this teacher. And he said, okay, I'll give you the A. And I'm like, I don't want the A. I want him to have the B. If you're going to get me a B, I'm going to have the B. So maybe he remembered that.
I love
it. But I would have never made it in Boston. No.
Are you kidding?
No. That was no.
But that was just so funny. I mean, like, really, after he saw all your work?
I know.
All your whole career, and like, then to say that to you?
Is that like a slap?
Really?
Or what?
Oh, well.
But to think, to even remember it. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding?
Yeah. That's interesting, obviously, isn't it?
Because he promised me, see?
Right.
He should have known me. He should have known not to do that anyway.
Riley.
Well, when I took Mac's class in Maine, I was the only woman. I think there were six in the class, and I was the only woman. And him and another guy said, you're so different. I'm like, what do you mean? And the other guy was from somewhere else, you know. I said, what do you mean? He said, you're just different. And then it occurred to me, you know, that I was just being me. And I guess at times, the jersey was coming out. You know? So I said to Mac once, I said, that's right. You're like, I said, you're a California boy.
Right.
I said, you're a California boy. I said, you know, I don't think I've ever met someone born in California. I've lived in California, but everyone I met came from somewhere
else. Yeah.
So you're the one who's different.
Right. And he's pretty, for a California guy, Mac's pretty cool. I really like him. I could have sat with him another.
Yeah,
you know.
He's a nice guy. We've become good friends, you know.
I can imagine. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
That's how your name came up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was because I had asked him. He's honoring women in art.
Okay. Yeah.
On his website this year, and I began to mention, and he said, "Oh, who you really want to get in touch with is Gail."
Oh yeah.
And which was great, and I was like, "I'm on it."
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh, she's just on her. She was just out here."
Yeah.
Oh, I said,
we were on the beaches. I told him. I said, "I want to see the Oregon beaches. I've never seen them.
They're
gorgeous,
stunning."
And so we did.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I had a job once for the South of France, a 79-day contract from the South of France.
Oh, man.
From Bill Gates. Yeah, he paid me really well.
What were you doing
and I,
for?
Anything I wanted, anything in Provence.
Really?
I had an editor who I used to work for at the Geographic, and he moved to a startup company that Bill Gates started. And he said, I got a 7-week assignment for you. Where would you like to go? And I thought he was kidding. I thought he was joking. He said, where would you like to go? I said, how about the South of France? He says, okay. Cool. And then the next year, he said, again. And he said, but this year I only have a 5-week contract. He says, so where would you like to go? I said, how about the Greek islands? He said, okay.
So you did some Greek islands for 5 weeks?
Yeah. I'm milking it.
Oh my God, how would you win yourself?
Well, I thought that was a great note to end on, and I hope you enjoyed my time with Gail as much as I did. I want to thank Gail, who has been far from milking it as a pioneering woman who's been breaking barriers her entire career as a photographer and filmmaker in a male-dominated profession. You do not want to miss Gail's newest documentary, Like a Woman. It is incredible. Be sure to check out her two very timely and invaluable contributions to our global community, likeawoman.us and openingoureyes.net. You can see more of Gail Mooney's work on kellymooney.com. Thank you for listening in today to Global Heart to Heart Podcast with pioneer photographer Gail Mooney. This is Mary Alice, with love from my heart to yours.